I'm Chinee Ogwumike.
I'm Lisa Leslie, and we're very excited to tell you about our new podcast with Blue Wire, Front and Center.
Lisa and I are breaking down what's going on in our lives, in the world, and keeping it 100.
We're also learning from amazing guests as well, like Emmanuel Acho.
People that show love to me, I forever got their back.
Vivica A. Fox.
If the foundation isn't right, then the rest of it's going to go wrong from there.
And more.
Subscribe to Front and Center today.
Capitals traded for him as they went from laughingstock in the NHL to playoff team. He spent five seasons in DC, a couple of 20-goal seasons, and his only 30-goal season, but yet was still traded away for what would become their future captain, a starting goalie, and the guys who took them to the next level. What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Capital Building Podcast with Rob Carlin, part of Blue Wire Podcast. Alan Haworth is my guest today. Please go on to the wherever you get your podcasts, like, leave a review, leave a rating, subscribe is the most important thing. Download, tell your friends to do the same as we help get the word out there about what I believe is the most in-depth podcast about your Washington Capitals you can get anywhere. Alan Haworth, again, is my guest today. He came over in a trade from Buffalo in the 81-82 season when the Caps became a playoff team for the first time in their history. There's a lot of guys who were traded to the Caps in those early 80s days that went on to have career seasons when they kind of built up what has become, as I discussed with Alan, a real, I wouldn't say dominant, but a very good, strong team that has really remained that way. They've had all their playoff failures, but there was a lot of winning that went on for a long time. And Alan Haworth was a big part of that. As I said, 20-goal seasons, his only career 30-goal season. He became the center on the Master Plumbers line with Craig Laughlin, Greg Adams, and Locker's great. You'll hear in the interview, I texted Locker to get some notes on Haworth, who, you know, is obviously well before my time. And he was great. You know, typical Locker, taking a shot here, being nice there, but two more shots there. But that Plumbers line, that's clearly not something you want to be known as. No professional athlete wants to be known as a plumber, but it was really said with the ultimate respect because the plumbers fix everything. So that was, you know, the genesis behind it. But, you know, Alan said that it was not a compliment. He did not find it to be a compliment when he first found out about it. But he's been a scout now for 12 years for the Caps. And, you know, really what interested me was what the life of a scout is and how they look at these kids and determine at a very young age and really kind of gamble on what they see when the kids are 16 and 17 to what they will be when they're 18, 19, 20 and beyond. And then what the life of a scout is, which if in your head you're picturing guy running into his car, eating a hot dog, spilling mustard on his shirt, cursing, and then driving off through the night to get to the next arena, that's pretty much what it is. We're not totally wrong. He confirms that because I asked him that question. So it's just neat to catch up with one of the guys that really helped set the Caps on their course to what they've been for the last three plus decades, which is a winning franchise that wins big, ultimately got a Stanley Cup, and you'll hear how important that was to Alan Haworth as well. So here is my guest on this Capital Building podcast, the great Alan Haworth. Well, Alan, I do want to get to your entire career, which started as a rookie with a huge overtime goal in Buffalo to get yourself out there, your name on the map, your great run here with the Caps, of course. I also have notes from your fellow plumber, Craig Laughlin. He gave me some talking points, so we'll see how you react to each one of those. But I want to start with your current gig, which is as a scout for the Caps. And I think a lot of people hear scout, and they're like, oh, so they're on the road, they watch games, they evaluate. But what is sort of the day-to-day and how you go about identifying the players and finding out whether your initial thoughts are real?
Yeah, it's complex. There's no doubt about that. I mean, you start looking at the kids when they're
16 years old, and then their draft year is going to be when they're 17 years old. So this year, just an example, we're looking at the 2000 born, September 16, 2003 to 2004, September 16. So that's when their first year they're eligible for the NHL draft. It's complex. There's no doubt about that. You know, every kid is good when they're 10 years old, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. They're probably the best of their group at that time. And so, you know, the evaluation is, of course, you know, the skating, the hockey sense, the compete level and everything else. And the when we do start looking at them, I mean, for me, based out of Quebec, it's the Quebec League and some Ontario League and the prep schools on the East Coast, the evaluation of the players. But, you know, you're not the only one who's looking at this certain player. You know, we usually see him about eight or nine times during the regular season. We have meetings. We start finding the players or looking at the players who we've seen, and pretty much the whole scouting in our organization do see the same player that we do see six or seven times during the whole year. We have meetings, and then we start picking at the players, you know, his positive points and his negative points.
How often do you get people coming up to you saying, you got to see this player? How do you get information on maybe some players that aren't the best, but you're going to discover them because someone said, you got to get out to this game wherever it may be and see this kid? He's electric.
It does happen, but I think the central scouting, their job is really to give us a hint on the players that are coming up. Players in the later rounds and so forth. So we're aware of the kids, you know, in every team. I mean, there'll maybe be two kids that we are looking at on a certain team, but then we're still keeping an eye on everyone, you know, how they're progressing, you know, because you got some late boomers and some kids, you know, improve their skating, their hockey skills and so forth. So you're always keeping an eye on everyone, more or less.
So you said you're obviously involved with the Q. How often did you get to see Hendrix LaPierre come up, and what are your thoughts of him?
Yeah, I saw Hendrix a whole lot when he was an underager in Chicoutimi in the Q. And then as well, his draft year last year at 17 years old before he did get injured. So, but myself, I must have seen him at least 9 or 10 times, and probably even more. Ross Mahoney as well, too. Steve Bowman, Phil Horner as well, too. My colleague in Ontario. So we have a good eye. We had a good viewing on him at least 10 times equally.
So you must. Really at your heart to be a scout, you have to be a junkie, right? I mean, how many games do you figure you watch in a year? And this isn't going from NHL arena to NHL arena. This is watching kids. I mean, do you still just love the whole process of identifying players, watching them play? Maybe you're catching them on a bad night and you got to, you know, parse through all that. You still just love it?
Yeah, because every year is different. You know, every year is a different crop of kids. Everyone's got a different personality, different character. His talent level is completely different. So it's not more or less like every year is going to resemble the year that we just passed. Every kid is different. They're different size, different skaters. Everyone brings something, a different degree to the game. And you know, it's not an exact science, so that's what's nice about it. I think it's a great job, and you're helping the kids, even if they're not going to play in the NHL, American Hockey League, up there in Europe as well, too. And, it's not boring. It is not boring, that's for sure.
So I think most people have, like, this vision in their head of, like, scouts hopping in their car, driving thousands of miles a year, eating fast food and chips on the road. What's being a scout in the NHL in 18, 19, and 20 really like?
Well, that pretty much sums
it up. That's it, huh?
That sums it up. I mean, you got to watch your weight there during the winter season. But it's, we usually go for about, at least 5 days a week. And sometimes we can have road trips of 10 days. But, the caps are really good on that. We usually come back on the, if you can grab a flight or drive back home on Sunday night. And then Monday, Tuesdays, you've got the reports. There's reports on every game you did see. And then usually Wednesday morning or Tuesday night, you're back off, for 8 month period. And hotels, driving, flights. And it's not boring. It's not boring. You get mentally fatigued, I would say, and Ross has talked about that too, and Steve Bowman as well. We first started talking, says, slow down a little bit, because the physical fatigue is not there, but the mental part of scouting and of traveling is harder, no doubt. And so you got to pace yourself. And but the nice thing part is you're anxious to get to the game. You love to see the kids play. There's some nights that he's not going to be playing, or he's not where you want him to be, but it's sports. And so you got to look at what he's done in the past and what he's going to be doing in the future. And it's always exciting, and the thing about watching the kids as well is that it's always prediction. You're trying to predict the kid down the road, 2-3 years, 4 years down the road. And these are still young men. Anything can happen, family, girlfriends, friends, outside the rink and so forth. And so there's a lot of things to consider. And while you're out, you talk to the agent, you talk to his friends, you find out pretty much his whole background, the kids that are interesting for myself, for the team to draft.
Was there I'm sure you're talking to scouts all the time, and just your whole life is around hockey, so you've been hearing the stories. And, I told you before, we played golf the other day with Locker and Joe B and Kenny Sabourin, and we were joking, me and Kevin Santos, who works at NBC Sports Washington, like, hockey stories are just the best, man. They are just so crazy. But in the scouting stories, is there one either for you or that you've come across that was like that big hit for a scout where – oh my God, that's a career changer, because I discovered a kid that became a superstar?
You do think that, and then you'll get a surprise if there's 30 other teams or 31 other teams looking at this kid. Central Scouting might have him as a, seventh rounder or sixth rounder. And then you start, really picking at him and so forth. But, you cannot, there's one thing I've learned. This is actually my 12th year. You can't fall in love with the kid as much as you'd love to fall in love with him and everything else, because he might be drafted by another team or so forth. But, they do have their ups and downs. Bottom line is try not to fall in love with the kid. There's no doubt about that.
And that's got to be tough, because you get to know these kids. You're meeting their families. You're meeting their coaches. I would imagine, because I was part of the conference call with Hendrix LaPierre.
Right.
Really good kid, great personality, answered the questions, did an interview with his coach at Chicoutimi, raved about him, the kind of kid that he is. I'm already a Hendrix LaPierre fan. Whatever happens, I already like this kid because of everything I heard. How hard is it not to sometimes have to be like, well, his game isn't what we need as an organization. So as much as I like him, I got to kind of cut bait on this kid.
Correct.
Is that a learned thing that you have to learn over time?
You learn it, but it's frustrating.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Because, like I said, there's so many other teams that are looking for the same thing for you. And I remember my first couple of years, I was like, oh, shoot, I wish we get this guy. Then you're in January and February, like, we're not going to get him and all, but, wherever we're going to pick at the draft and so forth. When you're seeing even the players that are getting picked from the other team, it's a process of you doing your job correctly. And like I was saying earlier, is predicting where you think this kid's going to be in 2 and 3 and 4 years. And so you kind of follow the players that you have seen in the junior leagues, and it's a learning experience for yourself because, you know, okay, he's doing as good as you thought he would, or he's not. And so this is where myself and other scouts as well, too, you kind of learn to kind of, you know, step down on the pedal a little bit. And like I said previously, not fall in love with him too much because of the personality. And he's a great kid, and you just wish the best for him. And sometimes it doesn't work out. But it's, yeah, it could be a heartbreaker as well.
Last question about the scouting. And, yep. You know, I always say coaches are brilliant when they got great players. Yeah, maybe not, they're not Hall of Fame coaches when their, you know, teams are just terrible. But for a scout, you got to look like a genius when you've got a top three pick. You know, every year you're drafting one of the best players. For you guys, really pretty much your entire career, how long do you say you're doing this? 16
12.
Years? 12 years with the Caps. So you're pretty much drafting at the bottom of the first round every year.
Yeah.
But yet the John Carlsons have come along, Braden Holtby late in the draft, the last couple of years with McMichael, and this year with LaPierre, it looks like you've got some talent. How tough is it to find those kids? Because now, you've got to see how many teams draft the kids you wanted, and B, you got to hit at 28, 29, 30 in the draft.
Yeah, well, that's where the experience of Ross Mahoney and Steve Bowman comes in. I mean, they've been doing this for so long. And with all my colleagues, you know, throughout the Caps, all the scouts and so forth, I think our meetings are done very, very well. You know, we could say, you know, whatever we think about the player. And, I mean, if we're right or if we're wrong, I mean, it's a consensus of all the scouts, whoever have seen him. I mean, just an example of if we're going to, in the first round, looking at a fella in Europe, and I've only seen him one time, I mean, I don't really have the right, even if he played a great game and he scored 3 goals, 2 assists, and he looked like, you know, Wayne Gretzky out there. My say on this kid is very, very small. Even, I shouldn't even talk about him, and I don't. And I think that's where Ross and Steve, you know, they look at the scouts that have seen this player multiple times, and not just myself saw him one time, and then, you know, I start, you know, saying that, oh, he's awesome, he's great and everything else. I mean, I saw him once. And these kids, you've got to see them, you know, 10 times, 12 times, 15 times during the year. And you just got to give it to Ross and Steve that, you know, they're able to balance, you know, the good and the bads and come to the player that the Caps want to pick.
Even though sports had a break, your business did not. So you have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com, the number one job site in the world, because Indeed gets you the best people fast. You only pay for what you need. You can pause your account at any time. There are no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. And with 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now to Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through December 31st. Football is back in swing. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in the action at Bet Online. Bet Online is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, Bet Online gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off wagering on wins, division, championship futures all day, every day. Head to Bet Online today and take advantage of all the great sign up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BlueWire at betonline.ag. That's BlueWire, all one word. Bet Online, your online sportsbook experts. All right. Fascinating. Like I said, I think that people have an idea. It's good to know that you are eating fast food on the road.
Absolutely.
Just like, right, just like we envisioned. As for your career, so you start off in Buffalo. I would imagine that every kid, you know, that grows up, that you're dreaming of winning a Stanley Cup, dreaming of making the NHL, and one of those dreams has to be like, I want to score an overtime goal as a rookie and just burst onto the scene. And you actually got to live that out. When you kind of waited and waited and you score that goal, was it just like delirium for you?
Yeah, that was so long ago.
You don't have that on instant recall? Like you can't remember it like it was yesterday?
No. I've been hit too many times on the head. There's too many things that I've completely forgotten and so forth. And I think, you know, there's a Stanley Cup playoffs that it's immensely a lot of pressure and so forth. I think you look back after the years and so forth, and yeah, it was a playoff goal, and you're all excited and so forth. But I just say it was just I can't say it's another game, but it's almost just like another game, you know, after all these years and so forth. But it was exciting. There's no doubt about that.
You come to the Caps, and that experience of those early 80s Caps, there's so many guys that seem to have career years when they were wearing that uniform in the early 80s, and you were very much the same. And it was sort of the start of what's been a really good run for the Caps for a couple of decades now. Despite all the playoff losses and all those disappointments, it's a lot of consistent winning that went on. What was it like here? And you're coming from Buffalo, where it's hockey crazed, to DC, where we're literally saving the Caps. But now there is this exciting takeoff. What was it like for all of you guys to kind of create this thing together?
Yeah, that was the first year that we made the playoffs. And, as a player, you don't hear too much what's going on the outside. But then you kind of knew, and it's like, that's impossible. You know, they were talking about maybe the Caps were going to move. I think it was 82 or 83. And so we finally made the playoffs the first year. And as you say, after that, I mean, we just had good teams after good teams with, like you say, so many players, and Larry Murphy, Rod, Gustafson, Carpenter, Scott Stevens, Larry Murphy.
It's a lot of Hall of Famers and great players, man.
Exactly. And you don't really realize at that time that these guys are going to become what they are. But, you know, everybody was talented and good in the right way.
So I texted your fellow plumber, Craig Lockman, get some notes on you before this, because there's one thing to read up about you. There's another to get the personal side. And the first thing that Locker said, I said, give me a good few stories I could drop on him. First thing, pissing off Brian Murray during practices. Was that you?
I guess that was me. And I know Brian had the short fuse and all that. And yeah, I don't know why, but Brian kind of blew up at me a couple of times and all that. For which reason, I don't remember.
Oh, yeah. Plausible deniability. They're like, maybe something. There I don't really remember.
Something.
Locker, here's another note here. Overpassing, celebrating, and running into each other. That was something that Locker said.
Yes. Yeah, I remember the our goalie coach at one time said, Alan says, you got to shoot the puck a little bit more. And so he must have dropped about 100 pucks in the slot area and so forth. And he came on, didn't put his skates on, and he just said, just shoot those pucks, just shoot those pucks, shoot, shoot, shoot. And I must have done that for a couple of weeks. But, I guess a little bit overpassing and everything else.
When you're a center, though, overpassing is not that terrible and flat. In fact, later on, he did say, Locker said, I credit him for my success, one of the most underrated centers to ever play for the Caps. It's got to be nice to hear a fellow teammate and a winger say something like that.
Yeah, well, the left winger was Greg Adams, and Locker was on the right side. And I played, center throughout my career, junior. And then when I went to Buffalo, there was just too many players in the center position. And Scotty Bowman put me on the wing, and then, got traded to Washington and stayed on the wing. And someone must have got hurt center position, and then Brian just put me center, and it kind of flew off. But yeah, we were the third line out there, and we had some very, very good seasons. I mean, we were in the plus, you know, I think I was plus like 30-some. Locker and Greg as well, too. So they called us the Master Plumbers, the third line.
Right. Yeah, you could fix anything, good. Right? You guys would there fix anything. Go. But here's what he said. He wrote in quotes, the plumbers, me, Howie, and Greg Adams. Greg Adams, a big part of our game, but Howie and I had speed and skill. Adams was the only plumber. That's Locker's part.
Locker speed.
He did say that later on. He said one of the fastest centers to play for the Caps ever, or maybe it was his wingers that made him look fast.
That was good. I mean, Locker was a smart player, you know, very, very smart. And he was poised with the puck, and we just played well together. And Greg on the other side was he was our tough winger on the side. You know, he'd go in the corners, dig out the pucks, and he'd take care of Locker and me, you know, whenever we didn't need help on the physical part. And we just clicked all three. It was nice.
He did say this, though. When he took a one-timer, he would screw himself into the ice and spin out. Locker's always got to, like, hit you with a little nice, take a dig, a little nice, take a dig. You got to understand that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Did you wear that go ahead.
No. Yeah, I do remember. Sometimes during the game you wanted to react fast to a few things, and I'm sure I had a few spin outs and blow a few tires here and there.
Did you wear the plumber's line as a badge of honor? Because it's meant with the utmost of respect, because it's the you fix everything, but it's right. Not the greatest term.
No, it isn't. You know, when they first, I think it came out. I think it was after a Rangers game or something like that, and someone mentioned that, and the next day I think it was Locker and Greg that came up and said, geez, they're calling us the Master Plumbers. I'm like, huh? Master Plumbers? I said, what is that? I mean. But then you do have to realize, and we did realize, you know, there was so many good players ahead of us that, we looked at it, okay, so maybe we are probably one of the best third line in the National Hockey League. So that wasn't bad at all. So at least we got recognized for one thing. So that was good.
So those teams in those early 80s, I'll be honest with you, I grew up on Long Island, so I was a huge Islanders fan. I was 8 when they won their first cup, 9, 10, 11. I was like, this is the greatest sport of all time. My team wins every single year. That was my point of view. What was your point of view of those Islanders teams that seemed to get in your way a whole heck of a lot in those days?
Well, I do have to say something about that. Mike Bossy is from Montreal.
Right.
So I ran into Mike, I think a couple of years after that. And he told me, he said, even if they push you out of the first round and all that, every game was so excited. It came down to, an overtime goal. Kaleur would score a goal, Bob Nystrom or something like that. But we held them, to every game. And of course, the future, and then you look at the past, they don't talk about it. But he told us that he told me that it was one of the hardest series that they had to, go on and win the Stanley Cup.
Did you feel that if not for them? Because I always look at the Ovi run with the Penguins in his way.
Right.
If not for the Penguins, I really do believe Ovi would have 2 or 3 cups by now. Just happened to be timing and Crosby and the Penguins and whatever. Do you feel that those Caps teams could have won cups if not for maybe those Islanders teams?
Yeah, it's always hard to say. I mean, right. You've got to – Mother Nature on hockey side's got to be with you. I mean, right. The puck's got to bounce. You do have to have some luck somewhere down the road. Goalie standing on your head and so forth. I would love to say yes, but I'm going to keep it at just don't know. You just don't know. I mean, every game is so hard to play. Anything could happen. injuries. I mean, I remember the 1 year we lost Ben Gustafson. You know, he cracked his knee. And I guess if Ben would have played with us for the remainder of the series, you know, we would have had a good chance. But, yeah. And I do have the same thought process you do as well, too. If the Caps could have won through Pittsburgh, that maybe we'd have two or three more Stanley Cups here. You know?
We were talking the other day about Rod Langway.
Yep.
When we were playing golf. And Joe, I didn't realize this. Joe B said that he could have played potentially three professional sports. Like, that's how good of an athlete he mm-hmm. was. Football, potentially baseball, too. And then hockey, he's a Hall of Famer. What was he like to play with and have him on the ice?
Well, Rod was the backbone of the team. There was no doubt about that. I mean, he worked hard in practices. He worked hard in the games. You know, he wasn't the most talented defenseman out there, but he just knew how to use his big body, and his work ethic was tremendous. You know, and scouting these days, and you look at Rod, the way you know, he brought himself to the game, every game preparation and so forth is something that, you know, is in the back of my mind when I'm scouting some kids as well too. But Rod was the ultimate defenseman out there. You know, not all offense, but you know, didn't do nothing wrong out there. He was the backbone.
Do you guys, because you said before, like, sometimes you don't realize how great these players are when you're yep. playing with them and you're in it. Did you realize, though, like, that's one of the best? Like, were there one or two guys that you play with, you're like, you know what, one day we're going to look back at this dude's career and be like, wow, I got to play with him?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, Rod was one of them. There was Larry Murphy, Mike Garner, even the guys that you know, didn't make it in the Hall of Fame. I mean, Dave Christian, there's so many. Bobby Gould, Doug Jarvis, you know, Craig Adams, my left winger and all that. Locker as well, too.
You didn't have to throw Locker in there just because you might hear this.
Right. But I mean, I got to mention Locker because he did score 30 goals while I was centering him. And I did score 30 goals while he was my right winger as well, too. But, I mean, yeah, you know, not everyone is prone to be in the Hall of Fame and so forth. And like you say, you look at these guys, the way they played, the way they put points on the board, defenses. But Rod, you just knew that he was going to always be, you know, one of the best defensemen that the Caps have had.
And then you get traded, which ends up going down as a huge trade for the Caps because they bring in Dale right. Hunter, and he kind of took the team to another level. Quebec ends up getting Sakic as a part of that trade. So it's kind of a big trade for both organizations. But what was that like for you? Because you had this great run of team success. You had this great run right. of personal success.
Yeah.
Where were you when you found out about the trade, and what do you remember about that?
It was a bummer.
Yeah, I'll bet.
It was a bummer. And, I, of course, you understand the trade and so forth. And, yeah, I was up north the St. Lawrence River and fishing. I fly fish a whole lot for Atlantic Salmon. And so I'm coming out of the woods. I was with one of my buddies. One of his buddies drives up the road and so forth and, you know, gave the news that I got traded to Quebec. And my knee blew out a couple of years before that in Quebec City. And then it was after that 1 year, and then problems with the contract situation and so forth. And I knew my knee wasn't going to, I had to, you know, reconstruct my whole knee completely, you know, after the season and so forth. And then went to Switzerland for the remainder.
Did you know at the time that you got traded, you're like, I don't know that anything will ever be as special. Like, I just had this great thing. I don't know if anything will ever be as special. Or do you go to Quebec thinking, all right, let's see this next chapter?
Yeah, you kind of think that way as well, too. But, I mean, it takes a little while. I mean, you know, all the guys who got traded during the year in the summertime and so forth, it's always pending on your heart. You know, you love where you're playing and the players and everything else. And there's no doubt that you got to turn the page at one time, and you do turn the page, and then you got the new friends and so forth. In Quebec, we're kind of rebuilding, but I got to play with Peter Stastny, and that was very, very special. And we're talking about guys that you knew that there were like Rod or Larry Murphy that were going to be in the Hall of Famer. And Peter was special as well, too. It was Michel Goulet, but Peter was a very, very special hockey player.
Yeah, they have some talent in that family.
It runs through the
blood in that family.
Yeah.
Last thing for you, to come back, to be a part of the Caps for this long, to this team, obviously, it's in your blood and it's in your bones. This team means a lot to you. So to be a part of it and to have been a part of it when they finally won the Stanley Cup, what was that whole time like for you? And do you sort of reflect at that point and be like, man, this organization means the world to me?
Yeah, it's an honor. There's no doubt about that. It's an honor. When George McPhee hired me with Ross, and I was so proud. I mean, I was so proud. It was just like, you know, making your first, not just playing your first game in the NHL, but staying there. You know, there's a lot of kids that do play but don't stay up. And I was very, very proud. And I was like, okay, this is a second chance at it. And let's go. And throughout the years, and like you said, you know, the Caps almost won this. Well, they had to go through Pittsburgh and so forth. And every year it's like, you know, your favorites and you kind of looking at the team, the concept, the way it's built and so forth. And there's a lot of people that kind of think ahead. Yeah, this is the year we're going to win the Stanley Cup. But it's like, okay, slow down, boys. I mean, this is a long process. I mean, the end of the year, the regular season, and the playoff is starting new. It's a new season. You know, you got to have lucky bounces and so forth. But yeah, when the Caps did with the Stanley Cup, it was something else. It's you're happy for everybody. You really are. You're happy for the people who worked in the organization for so many years and, you know, didn't win the Stanley Cup. And just to see their reaction and so forth, and all my colleagues and, you know, everyone in the organization, from the, you know, from the players to the doctors, to the people working in the offices, you know. It's, for me, that my thought was there.
And I said that was going to be the last question. I had one more for you, and it's going to go against seemingly everything you're made of, because it sounds like you're a guy who's not going to take bold chances because you're a scout. You have to be measured. You don't want to say you would have won the cup in the 80s. You're measured. But I need your prediction. Does Ovi give Gretzky a run, the all-time goals record?
If he stays healthy and
you're tempering it. Come on, give me something good.
there's no doubt that for me, he's probably one of the best goal scorers there is. There is no doubt about that. He just has that knack. And when I say the knack, it's like Jack Nicklaus, you know, the Tiger Woods, you know, if I just, you know, make examples in the golf and so forth. But if he sticks around long enough, yes, he will. Yes, he will.
I love it. You got definite there. I appreciate that. Great stories. I know I ate up a lot of your time. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. And hopefully we'll speak again down the road. And hopefully we've got a hockey season to talk about soon.
Very good, Rob. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Well, I certainly hope you enjoyed that interview, that conversation with Alan Haworth. And I always hate calling them an interview, because an interview makes it sound like I've got my question, you answer it. I've got my question, you answer it. These are more conversations, and it's fun to get to know these guys and explore, you know, what they do now, what it was like when they were stars with the Caps. And clearly he had a great relationship with Locker and Adams and all those guys, you know, Rod Langway and Scott Stevens. And again, as we went through it, the amount of Hall of Fame players and elite players of their time, some really great Caps teams, man. They've had some really great players over the years, historic players, all leading up to Ovi and the Stanley Cup. And how great is it that a guy like Alan Haworth, who gave so much in the early days establishing the Caps, then 30 years later, whatever it is, you know, 30 plus years later, gets to raise the Stanley Cup as a scout, so still part of the organization. That is not any less You know, he helped build the franchise in more ways than one, as a player building the building blocks, and then as a scout getting those players and bringing them in, the players that eventually won the Stanley Cup. So I just think it's really cool for him to have, you know, lived both sides of what the organization is, was, and has become. And, you know, for him to lift that Stanley Cup, to feel a part of it, to be a part of it, is very special. Alan May, I always talk about this, you know, that this team is in his blood and his bones, and he's done it from a broadcaster slash, you know, powerful alumni. And I say powerful because he's been around for so long, so he helps organize a lot of these things. But for Alan Haworth to really be in it the day to day for more than a decade now, very cool. Very cool stuff. So I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Alan Haworth. Again, please go and like and write a review and leave a rating, and subscribe is the most important thing. Download these episodes, the Capital Building Podcast, part of Blue Wire Podcast, which is a really exciting group. Go check out Blue Wire. You know, Google it. They have tons of really exciting new podcasts. Some professional athletes, some former professional athletes, some guys like me, journalists who had covered teams over the years, and then just fans with wildly popular podcasts. So go check out Blue Wire Podcast. But again, like, write a review, leave a rating, subscribe to the Capital Building Podcast with Rob Carlin. We'll have much more to come. Hope you enjoyed the conversation with Alan Haworth. We'll talk again soon, and let's go Caps.